Okay, thank you very much. So welcome back, please. Most people stayed. Very good. So I was in discussion with some people, and my favorite personalities from when I was growing up were two from Austria. Franz Klammer was one, and Niki Lauda was second. Yeah, I'm teaching skiing. I have a professional ski instructor license, and I have a class every winter, children, and teaching skiing. That's my hobby. I remember how I was the first time excited when I was flying Lauda Air. The short flight, I don't remember where, from Vienna somewhere, but within an hour they were able to serve full lunch, including Sachertorte at the end. But it was some years back, of course. Now you won't get it in first class. Okay, so let's go to our presentation. Extending IT to private and public cloud. I'm doing this presentation first time. I'm pretty excited about it, an audience. So I was working for about a year with SQL Azure customers and in development. And as I mentioned now, we have all development in one. So of course I'm very interested in the cloud and how the technologies go there. And I am a strong believer in the future of the cloud. And let me talk about it. So first, steps to the cloud. This is from Gartner. And I like this slide because this kind of shows there is a sequence. And it starts with server virtualization, goes through distributed virtualization. I will explain a little bit what the difference is. Then go to private cloud, hybrid cloud, and public cloud. So the server virtualization, many people are doing it today, is fine. The distributed virtualization is a step where you have multiple servers and you can kind of go back and forth. And I was talking about this, we are bringing Windows 8. It will help you do better there, the distributed virtualization. And I will be talking a lot about the private cloud step in all this sequence. And you have also some handouts. There is one of the papers color on both sides, which I send in advance, and here were nice to distribute it, because I will have a couple of slides about that, and you will need it because the print is very small, even on a screen. And then I will talk also about public cloud at the end, and now also at the beginning a little bit. And the big thing is that what kind of inspires me is the clear economy advantage of the cloud computing. So today, you are, if you're a data center, starting data center, you are somewhere on the left. So you have to have enough servers and capacity, storage and everything to serve the peaks. Yeah? So that's the capacity you pay for. And demand is somewhere kind of going up and down, but you have to be above that. In the data center, the promise is that basically you pay only for your demand. And so this is kind of... And I strongly believe that the economy is what pulls the changes forward. And so the unused resources, basically, they are almost, well, we'll talk about it a little bit in the public cloud. Now, so these economies of scales, that's another thing, that the bigger you build a data center, the larger the volume discounts you have. So for example, in our data centers, the machines are brought in containers, the same as your ship containers. And the container has three holes to connect to: network, cooling, and power. And they bring the container, it's there, and until certain percentage of the machines is down, it's there, and they take out the container and bring a new container. So you see that installing hardware and that container contains That's our 2,500 machines. So then another advantage is common infrastructure for the hardware. Common infrastructure. So, for example, for power, what we are doing in data centers, they are used either batteries or flying wheels. Flying wheels are big, kind of huge wheels, which are turning, and the batteries, and those are used for, in the case power go down, until the generators are started, because starting generators takes several minutes, and if you don't want your data center to come down, you have to supply the power for that short period of time until the generators, powered by gas or by oil, come up. And the bigger these machines you have, the less is cost per megawatt it has to produce. Okay? So these are kind of them. Now, I'm now part of, we are working on SQL Server, but we are also working on software which automates those data centers, which fails over automatically, which detects anywhere is a problem, and there is so much automation going on, and lots of software we have to develop for that. And the bigger the data center is, of course, the cheaper, because you are using one development source it is. Now, different companies, banks, and manufacturers have different peaks in their consumption of computing power. It is also given by geographic location, yes. But bank has, well, I was working with one Italian bank, and they had problems in the morning when they were opening branches, yes, because they had peak, people are connecting, and every day during the day was fine, end of the day was another peak, and the weekends and nights there was no use at all. So if you have to collect many of such users to kind of take care of, that the peaks are kind of softer and softer, and the use of resources is better. But going to the public cloud may be a long process, and I will at the end of the last part of the talk a little bit more about it, why, what are the problems, and also give some examples how you can avoid those problems. Okay, so this is where we are. So let's now go to the central part of the private cloud. So first thing is, private cloud is today's reality. And I have a bunch of research studies, this AFCOM, this is the Association of Data Center Providers or Data Center Engineers. So there are many, lots of evidence that the private cloud is happening. And I will also explain in detail what is and what is not private cloud. Now, half of federal agencies, so yes, federal, the government, and especially governments in big countries, have big ITs. So for them, the idea of saving, concentrating the resources is extremely attractive. We know that, I know how looks VMware's stock chart. I'm not going to show it, because it looks better than Microsoft, of course. But the adoption of virtual machines is increasing dramatically. And self-service, so even if you virtualize everything, there is still lots of work left on maintaining the systems. And part by part, people are coming up with solutions how to automate more and more of that. Automatic failover when something is wrong with a disk or with some other part, automatically reboot, automatically balance for the workloads. So there's more and more of this automation happening. And Forrester, they did some research on databases, and we're talking to many customers, and more than 50% are working on virtualization, standardization, and also consolidation. So this is We are already in this, so virtualization is happening. There is obvious benefits, okay, so there is no doubt about it. Now, how we in SQL Server and in general Microsoft are looking at this, and how are we going to help you to kind of go from the simple virtualization forward to the private cloud? So these are the advantages of private cloud: resource pooling, elasticity, self-service and control and customization. And I will go one by one, I will explain. And you have had the handout for this, so I don't know if you can read it or not because it's pretty small. So resource pooling, and I mentioned by pooling the resources together to one data center, to small number of machines, where you can share the resources among various applications, is reducing your expenses. And not only the capital, but also the operational, because you have less machines, less operating systems to take care of, less software. And less machines means also less power and less electricity. Elasticity, so by putting things on, more things on bigger machines, you have bigger, going with resources, one application needs more, one application less. If you much more than if everyone, every application is running on a separate machine, is limited by those resources on that machine. Sharing more resources gives you usually more ability to go up and down with resource usage, and helps you with dynamicity. If somebody needs more, you have it there. And if less, you can let it other use. Self-service is mostly about reducing the cost of administering things. As I mentioned, the more you automate, the less less administration work and administrators you need. And control and customize is that once you have all the application in one place, it's much easier for you to enforce some business rules which you have, security, who can log in, who can see what. Yes? Yeah, I can go like that. Okay, very good, thank you. What is it bringing back?
Control 4.
Okay, very good. No, I couldn't handle that. So, with each of the advantages, we are there are some steps and some tools, and we go through those. So, first, when you want to do this consolidation, you need to find where all your databases are, and there is this map toolkit. It's pretty cool tool because it's not only discovers, but also it evaluates the hardware which you are running it on, and as I'm talking more about the appliances which we have for database consolidation, can help you to tell what kind of appliance you should use for that particular deployment of your application. So the planning tool and for the upgrade advisor, so if you have like SQL servers of different versions, we have this upgrade advisor which will scan your store procedures, which will scan your configuration and suggest you if there is potential problems or how to work around those problems. And the migration assistant is for migration from other products, for example, from Informix or Sybase. You want to migrate, the assistant can help you to, it's not fully automated, but to certain extent can help you automate some steps as well as determine where you will need to do more manual work on that. the system center, you know, system center VM manager, that's a tool which I will mention many times because it's used for many different things. And here in the first, when you are starting to do virtualization, you have to get it from physical machine to virtual machine, so that can help you there. So again, you will need to decide how you will collect your instances and how you will connect your databases, and we have tools to help you with that as well. For the resources, again, so failover clustering is for achieving high availability. And now we have this always on in 2012, which you've heard. You can, for example, group your databases and failing over groups of databases, because many applications we know have are using more than one database. And as I mentioned and showed, that you can do the migration, and we have already now in Hyper-V, we have live migration, that you can migrate from your VM from one machine to another machine in a cluster without any downtime. We copy the content of the memory and synchronize it completely, and then until we are synchronized, and then we use another machine. And as I mentioned in the Windows Server 2008, you will be able to also move the disks from one machine to another machine. For deployment, so virtual machine templates. So in your environment, you can create several templates, which users then be deciding which of the templates to use for their applications, and that can speed up their virtualization. How they can go to virtualize their machines. Then you there is also a portal on top of the virtual machines which you can use to manage the once you virtualize the systems. What is very very important, and what kind of one of the steps to private cloud is ability to measure the consumption, to have tools to measure the consumption. And what I'm talking about is there is a difference between virtualization and the private cloud. And it's at the moment when you create an IT environment, this is run like a business. You charge the other organizations. You have means to measure the consumption. And at that moment, I'm talking that this is, you have true private cloud. You basically separate all the expenses, everything, and you can compare it with the you know, the cost. You can measure how your IT is efficient, and there are tools. The System Center VM manager has tools for measuring the consumption and managing private cloud. Again, the same tool you have to centrally manage the cloud. Now, there is a link somewhere. So there is a call to action, is a site where we have much more information, microsoft.com, about the private cloud. So there are, you can go about three different ways when you are going to build, you want to build a private cloud, go to private cloud. First step, first option is a self-build. So when you self-build, you can use existing hardware. You have the most flexibility, but it will be will take also most effort. So you take all of this to your hand, and we have some tools for you. And this is this SQL the deployment guide, and also there is a white paper for about SQL Server private cloud. And I have links to both at the end of the presentation. So besides the greatest flexibility, reuse hardware, it most likely will take you the most effort to use this solution and biggest investment. Then we have so-called reference architecture solution. The reference architecture is giving you some flexibility on the components because it is built on your premise. You have this guide, you know what hardware to use, and there are some options when it is being installed. And there's guidance for that. So it will take you less time than the totally self-built. It will perform probably better because there is measured and kind of pre-configured tested configurations will be suggested to you, and you will have less flexibility because it is applicable to certain kinds of hardware. And the third potential solution is to go and buy an appliance. And I'll be talking more about these HP appliances in more details. So the appliance is completely pre-configured. It's the whole, all the software and hardware put together in a factory, and you have some choices between half rack all the way to 10 to put together. There is all is tested before it's shipped to you. It has there's 27 different kind of software products put together to work together on the appliance, and there were some of them had some unique changes specifically identified and implemented for these appliances. You have a single connection, single phone number for support, all that. So looking at the, it is fastest to deployment because it's installed and it's pre-configured and all software is already on that box. And it is tuned for performance, and I will also tell you what the options are, but gives you no flexibility. It is hardware, this hardware and this software, and this is what you have to kind of take. So here is a little bit about how we are building the appliances, so you understand what we are taking into consideration. At first, we are looking at workload, so therefore, we are developing several kinds of appliances according to the kind of a workload. So you should kind of know what kind of workload you have, or groups of workload which we are creating appliances for, and I will go for that. Then we look at the architecture of the solution and the software and hardware, and we put it like we evaluate different architectures, we pick the best one, and with that goes the software, and we have particular hardware as a target of the appliance. And this is pretty straightforward. But you should understand. I was this week talking, working with director of our appliances, and I was asking why it takes us so long to develop kind of the appliance from when they start to the end. And basically to put all this together, there is lots of technical and legal kind of obstacles because there are multiple companies getting together. They have to understand how we will do the support. There is lots of, as I mentioned, in this appliance we have 27 different pieces of software. Now, as I mentioned, we have different types of appliances. And for data warehouse, so one thing is reference architecture, when we have some documents which can help you to build the system yourself. And then there is appliance, which is called a pre-built, pre-configured system. For data warehouse, we have two kinds of appliances. The enterprise data warehouse is the, we call it also PDW, the parallel data warehouse. That's a big appliance for hundreds of terabytes of data. The HP Business Data Warehouse, that is covering the lower end of the spectrum of the data warehousing. Business intelligence, you heard that we have a new SKU and also business intelligence appliance. But I consider the most important is this the database consolidation appliance, and I will talk in more detail about that. And we have also Hyper-V Cloud Fast Track reference architecture if you decide build everything yourself. And we are also working on OLTP type of appliance going forward. I'll be talking more about this consolidation appliance. So the goal of the consolidation is bring many things to one and to much small manageable number. And I will give you exact numbers how much one rack and half rack and multiple racks, how many database instances can host. And by using the private cloud, you will get all the advantages of the all the cloud advantages. So this is cost savings, so power and cooling, and I will show you some numbers for that. Floor space, maintenance. Compliance and governance is much easier when it's all integrated. And also I will show how we do scale out the tier one services, how you can add more and more of these appliances and scale the workload on that. And operational private cloud, that should be your goal in this first step. So here is the database consolidation appliance. The smallest one is half rack. I heard now that they are talking about maybe that they will support some quarter rack. And it is for approximately 100 VMs, and I will show the mixture of the VMs, because we have like different sizes of databases. Goes to full rack, it goes all the way up to 10 rack systems. And the energy save, so we have here also showing what kind of savings you are getting compared to if you have all those VMs hosted on separate servers. So the energy is about one-tenth. The mega BTUs, that's for cooling, is 1 to 20. And the physical space is, again, it's approximately 1 to 9, 1 to 10. So these are the savings which, as I mentioned, compared to installing it on separate servers. As I mentioned, we have also done some kind of pre-configuration, like we are talking about small, medium, large. So later I will show also extra small, extra large virtual machines. And here are approximately numbers which for each of those is considered. So regarding the virtual processor, it goes 1 to 4. Four virtual processors is currently maximum supported by Hyper-V on Windows servers 2008. So there comes on the maximum. Also, the 16 gigabyte RAM maximum is given by that. Now, we also created so-called balanced workload mix. By working with several internal and external customers, we look at how the database variance, and this is pretty typical mix of the VMs which we see in those customers. And we also made some assumptions on the IOs, on the ratio between reads and writes, and we use test workload TPC. That's the standard benchmark for OLTP. And as I mentioned, besides the three small, medium, large, we also using the extra small and extra large. That's the largest possible. And you see the maximums, what are kind of where the maximums are taken from. Now, at this moment, I must mention going back to the what I was talking about, the Hyper-V in Office in Windows 8, that the limits will be much higher. So what we will do then, if you buy the appliance now, we will support also the upgrade to the new software, to the Windows 8 and the Hyper-V with all those new advantages, all these advantages. But it's not surprising, we are finding, especially in a bigger organization, there are thousands of very small SQL servers. So there will be, I think, long life for these appliances. Here's this table shows approximately mix and also where we were testing the appliance. So this is what kind of mixes we suggest. Goes from, the first small, the extra small, small, medium, large, extra large. Those are only if I have VMs of that size. And the last one is balanced mix, when we mix the mixture of the different VMs for the appliance. Okay, so this is the suggested configuration. Here from the performance testing, what is important to remember that we have six on the full rack is 60,000 IOPS. It's input-output operations per second for full rack, and it goes half to half rack, and we have two storage blocks per half rack, so then all kind of goes down. There are spare disks, and RAID 10 is used across the appliance. Yeah. So there is no single point of failure on the whole appliance. As I mentioned, RAID storage with spares, but also network is redundant, and also power is redundant. So it's all fully configured for redundancy. Now, we have also so when you get the appliance, there is running bunch of software, and this is the host software and cluster, and we are using high-availability VMs to run the software which is managing the appliance itself. And guest clustering, you have ability edge the high availability with warm restart. Now, let me go to the last part of the presentation and talk a little bit about public cloud. I started talking about it at the beginning a little bit, but I now start with there are some challenges which we see people as they are trying to use public cloud. First thing is people are surprised that in public cloud disconnects are very frequent. Why? One thing is between your application, if you are an application on premise against database in the cloud, there is a whole network, whole internet. And even if you are running it within the same data center on Windows Azure, your application, and you have your database in SQL Azure, there are many switches before you kind of reach from the Windows Azure to SQL Azure application. Plus, as I mentioned already before, we are also, if I see overuse of resources, I want to give you better machine. I will disconnect you and fail you over somewhere else where you have more resources, but that will disconnect you. And what I have found out with working with several customers, Simply, they had the applications which were running on the same box as the SQL Server, and there was no consideration whatsoever about, you know, disconnects or anything. You say, well, we are running years like this, never had this problem. Why suddenly I go to cloud, I have a problem with it? Because the cloud is different environment. So that's one thing. Another thing is round trips. Round trips are much more expensive. Again, regardless if it is within the data center or outside of data center, the round trips, if I'm running the application on the same box as SQL Server, are microseconds. If you are running against cloud, it may be 10, 20 milliseconds, depending how you are located. Now, if you have applications, which I've seen from several vendors, when they are doing tens of thousands round trips, for example, installing new database, starting new database, tens of thousands round trips, then suddenly from minutes on a box, it goes to hours in the cloud. So you should be sensitive to that. That's connectivity and round trips. The features. Currently, SQL Azure is mostly like a subset of SQL Server. There are several reasons why some features are not in SQL Azure. This is three main categories. One is some features don't make sense. For example, all the operations on file groups, suddenly you don't have access to file groups in SQL Azure, so it's not there. Second group is there are features which need some significant amount of work for us, and we didn't have time to do that. And the third is features which we don't intend to extend to cloud. There are also features like that. So features and also those features which are there are not exactly the same, or there are some replacement. I give you two examples. One thing is, for example, today in SQL Azure, you cannot run jobs. If you talk to any DBA, you say, how can exist run without jobs? Jobs is my life. I'm running through everything. So jobs, I have procedures and running through jobs. Well, there are some challenges, and we are working addressing them, but more work needed. But there is a workaround. You can run your job on-premise, and it can be issuing commands against the SQL Azure. So there is a way to get around it. Second thing is, currently there is no replication in SQL Azure. And we have many, many applications out there are using replication. But, well, there is no replication, but we have so-called data sync in Azure, which has many of the functionalities which you can use to replace, to achieve the same as this replication. So the bottom line is that best practice is rather than trying take a SQL Server application as I have it today, jam it into SQL Azure, because then I will be finding all these kind of discrepancies, is to develop, and when you are developing a new application with having the SQL Azure in mind, then you can be really successful. And I want to show a video of one of our customers, and then I will tell more about it. The customer is Transport of London, and they introduced, they are using SQL Azure, and it was already mentioned today, they are using it for running. So let's see the video.
Traveling within London is all about choice. Transport for London is keen to empower our customers with the information that allows them to choose their most appropriate way of getting around this busy and very large city.
There are all sorts of events that go on in London. None of them are inside of our control, and they all can put enormous spikes of demand on our network at any given point in time.
We also feel as an organization that this data should be made more widely available, and that very much fits in with the policy of the national government, but also the GLA and the mayor's office within London.
In our original instantiation of a system we call TrackerNet, which exposes the data on where the tube trains are at any given point in time, we were experiencing 1,000 hits a day. Nothing dramatic. But then the smartphone explosion happened. to deliver the sort of data that these mobile devices can consume at the volume they can consume at the rate they're increasing was beyond us. We needed a different alternative. Microsoft Services helped us get it done. Microsoft Services were able to come in, and not only were they masters of their own technology, which of course we would expect, but they were able to understand what our problems were very, very quickly. The way they looked ahead, the way they solved problems that we hadn't anticipated before we got there, problems around authentication, problems around security.
The best way we felt was working in partnership with an organization like Microsoft Services, where we could investigate using your cloud-based solutions, such as Microsoft Azure, to support the data, make it widely available in a robust, effective way.
Windows Azure is a very simple platform to program for. Because of that, it means that we can do an awful lot very, very quickly. But it's also, being cloud-based, extremely scalable. 6 weeks from sitting down and having a conversation about generic problem to having an operational system delivering millions of data hits. Without their help, we simply couldn't have done it. The cost to the taxpayer is virtually nothing. The benefit to the traveling public is enormous.
Making our data available to the developers is an exciting way forward for TFL. It's a key element of our broader digital strategy. It allows innovation in terms of data and how it's used, but again gives customers ultimately a better service.
We have changed the dynamics of the relationship with Microsoft at TFL. Now we understand how much power we could let loose, and there are so many opportunities to do that.
Going forward, we're looking at other ways of working with Microsoft, developing the data needs of Transport for London. And I think it's an innovative way forward that other public sector organisations in the United Kingdom should look to and should consider.
So, this was Record TrackerNet application, and it was developed for Windows Azure, and they are creating data feeds which other people can program to or go after. And as you heard him mention millions, so this 2.3 million hits, website hits, up to 1,000 a day. Took 6 weeks from development to production. That's pretty impressive. And here is where you can start to consider, aha, you know, I have all these resources out there ready to rent. I don't need to, you know, get servers, build a data center, get people, get it all operational. That is the kind of where you can gain most of the time, all of that. And you can design solutions that will scale automatically to the demand. So we have load balancing and there is still some kind of manual work, but we are advancing it forward to make it as automated as possible. So this was this example. Besides the, so here's the free Windows trial. This is now kind of applicable so that you can go and you can try and play with the Azure. And this is all exactly what you will get. This is 1 GB SQL Azure database for 90 days. So this is for SQL Server, but you can get much more, including your Windows Azure. You can do your Windows Azure application. Otherwise, currently, regarding paying for this kind of 1 GB database, if you want to kind of have it, you would pay $10 a month for 1 GB database. Plus, you pay for extracting data from data center. You don't pay for transfer between the database and Windows Azure if you are running the same data center. And you can locate your databases and Windows Azure in six different data centers. We have two in US, two in Europe, and two in Asia currently. What attracts me about the cloud and the public cloud is not only the ability to create your new applications there, but also there are completely new opportunities for new kind of data-related services. And we have created one such service, which we call Data Market, and it contains data from all kinds of sources. We have lots of data from UN, but also from individual companies as well. So, and we call it marketplace. So, we presenting it as a global place for when you can be on two sides. You can be the data provider, provide the data, or you can be data consumer. And providers of data have option to sell the data, and also as a consumer can be buying the data. And we are trying to create this premium marketplace where your data can reside either in SQL Azure or even on your premise, and you can sell it through the service in the cloud. And now I will ask Robert to show us a demo. Gray. Gray button.
Okay, microphone is on. So let me show you the data marketplace. So if you go to datamarket.azure.com, you can log on, you can explore data, and the video that we just saw from the London transportation system, the same way someone could expose data sets. And I can search here, for example, crime data. And so you see there are some data sets published right now about London, about other data sets. There's data set about the US, crime in different cities in the US. And that one is quite interesting. So some of the data sets, as you will see, are available for free in the subscription. And for some of them, you have to pay based on your transaction volume. In this particular case, I'm picking one that is free. And it basically is crime statistics from the years 2006 to 2008 from the United States. You can explore the data set before you buy it. And in this case, there's a query interface. I can just run the query without any parameters. And what we see here is we get a subset of data. So I can page through the data. There's actually many more rows than the 257. It only initially retrieved 257. I can page through the data if I want to. I can also export the data. And so what we see in this particular case, it's a fairly simple data set. There's only one table, has a couple of columns. There's not really much structure to it. There are other data sets that have many tables, that have many, many columns. And so for this example here, I'm basically just exporting this. I'm basically downloading it into Excel Power Pivot. And so if I do this, what happens is it launches Power Pivot. And we've seen this earlier today. What I'm showing here is basically the import of the data. And what I need here is the key that I'm using for this demo. And I can test the connection. I can go next. I can preview data on the import and filter them. Depending on the speed of the connection, this may take a couple of seconds. The actual data set has a couple of, I guess, tens of thousands of rows. So I can preview a subset of the data, and maybe I don't want all columns, or I'm fine with it, and I can basically just say I want to finish it. So this would take a couple of minutes depending on how quick the speed is of the connection that I have here. So instead of waiting, we can also basically, I downloaded this data set earlier. And so what I got after I downloaded it, so this is exactly what we see here. And I open it up in Power Pivot right now. So what we see here is a flat table of data. And I can also look in the diagram view. So we only got one table of this particular data set, so I'll keep it fairly simple. But I want to show here is that within Power Pivot, so we basically have state, we have city, we have year, we have population data, and then we have different types of crimes that happened and how many of these happened. What I can do here easily is, and before I do this, let me switch back to just showing, I can create a pivot table. And for the pivot table, I'm choosing the connection to connect to the Power Pivot model. And for that one, I could pick, for example, the states, and I could pick the different types of crimes that happened, and basically show you numbers of the different crimes that happened in these states. But we also see that there is a structure to it. So there's state and there is city. And for the state and city, I guess it's not coming back right now. For the state and city, there's a hierarchy structure to it. And so what I'm going to show is that I can create a pivot table right now that just has states and city without any relationship to it. I can easily create a hierarchy on top of the data that I just imported from the data marketplace. Maybe the other one that is still importing. Stopping the import on this instance here. Okay, it seems like the other import was blocking something. So I can see the structure here of the data. As I mentioned, I can go ahead and create a hierarchy. In this case, I just select the two columns and I select create hierarchy. This is a new capability that was introduced in the Power Pivot add-in for SQL Server 2012. And I call this region. And if I go back now to my pivot table, I basically get this notification that the model has changed underneath. And I can keep working with the current model as it is. Alternatively, I can refresh, and I see region now shows up with a hierarchy. And so I could basically replace state with region and automatically created a hierarchy within my pivot table from the flat data set out of data market of the data that I got. So the idea, I hope you got the idea that you can basically integrate data. With Power Pivot, you can mesh up data from different sources. One of the sources could be Azure Data Marketplace. Another one could be your local database, right? For example, you're thinking of starting a business in the United States and your business is sensitive to crime rates. Then I could mesh the data up with the crime rates, create a relationship between the data, create hierarchies in the data, and quickly create an analysis inside Excel, and then take that workbook, publish it, upload it to the Power Pivot Gallery, as I showed in the session earlier today, and you can create Power View reports and presentations from it as well. That's all I wanted to show. Thank you, Luba.
Public cloud is our long-term vision. How long and how we'll be getting to the public cloud will be for different businesses and different applications, I think different route. But I've shown you that there are success stories behind that. We have customers, and you know, this was actually, London is next year getting ready for Olympic Games, so this was part of their kind of program preparing for that. And we help them to do the really very fast deploy. Getting to public cloud, the private cloud, and hybrid clouds, which are combinations of private cloud and public cloud, are very important steps. And I believe that these steps we can take much earlier. I've seen the numbers. We look at the half of the businesses and half of the SQL servers to be in this kind of private cloud environments within a year or two. As we've seen developing applications using SQL Azure and Windows Azure, that's the best way to get to the public cloud, and you can get huge savings, the infrastructure, and rapid deployment. And the cloud is not only about moving your applications, but also brand new opportunities. And we have shown you here with the data market, which is kind of a new idea, a new opportunity, then you can use both for publishing your data as well as consuming and combining with other data, creating new unique applications. So here I would like to thank you very much. There are some references at the end. The Nicholas Carr, That Big Switch, it's a very interesting book, which is comparing advancement in cloud computing with electrification in more than 100 years ago. And if you are not sure about cloud and why cloud and that stuff, read that book. It's a short book, two-hour flight can do it. It's a short book and extremely inspirational for people. Okay, and there's more references, basically everything what we have in the presentation you should find here. So with that, I would like to thank you very much for the whole day spending with us here, and I hope you learn a lot about the SQL Server 2012 and new opportunities, and then you will take something with you home and to your businesses. So thank you very much.
Actually.